Alex Jones here reporting for InfoWars Nightly News with this special report. Well, darker days have come to our republic. The United States, once a bastion and light of liberty worldwide, is now an example of tyranny and oppression not even seen in Soviet Russia or Nazi Germany. Not even the Nazi Germans set up checkpoints and groped people's genitals. Now, the NFL, basically under unlawful orders by Big Sis Janet Napolitano, has ordered the NFL to grope all 16 plus million of their fans that go into the sports supercenters every year. In fact, the teams have now announced today that starting this weekend, everyone will be groped. Now, before I get into this report, notice, first it's take your shoes off and take your belt off and take your jacket off. Then it's we're going to grope you on the outside of your pants. Then it's we're going inside your pants. Now we're going to put you in these microwave ovens that are killing the TSA workers as well. Now the TSA and Big Sis at the last Super Bowl are there helping run the security of the Super Bowl in Dallas. Now it's going to happen at every event. We're going to grope you from the ankles all the way up to your breast, all the way up to your neck. They say they're going to grab your wife's breast. They're going to take the diaper off of your baby. The same stuff that goes on in the airports. And people say, well, if you don't like it, don't fly. And then it's, well, if you don't like it, don't go to an NFL game. Here's the problem. It's always more, more, more 10 years after 9/11. TSA is announcing and has now shown up in, well, just 3-4 months ago in New Mexico, groping people at a prom. TSA has announced that they want to put their trained officers. So if you get knighted by the TSA, that they wave a magic wand, now you can violate people's rights. Police departments, state police, other federal police, and private security guards are now saying that they're going to have a right without a warrant to stick their hands down your pants. They're saying shopping malls. Janet Napolitano is at the Super Bowl and other games in your face as if you wouldn't be safe if she wasn't here taking all your rights. 9,000 locations like Walmart with telescreens saying don't trust your neighbor, only trust Big Sis, and running PSAs where all the terrorists basically look like Tea Partiers. This is all happening. This is the authoritarian overthrow of America. It has nothing to do with terrorism. The government admits they put the underwear bomber on the plane on Christmas Day. That was staged on record. All of this stuff is garbage. Amir al-Awlaki, number 3 in al-Qaeda, is hanging out secretly at the Pentagon. The State Department has now come out and said that they won't give up his records for his privacy. It's staged. They were giving Libya over to al-Qaeda. They're giving al-Qaeda a seat at the UN. They're admitting they're engaged in genocide, exterminating blacks, but that's okay. Al-Qaeda gets given a country, but you, your wife, your children get to have private security grope them. And that's all that's happening here is our republic's being overthrown. It's a federal power grab. What jurisdiction does Big Sis have to be in all these big football games? What jurisdiction to be in these public-private partnerships at Walmart saying, you know, don't trust anybody? Let's say terrorism was real. You've got a better chance of dying from being struck by lightning or bee stings. Look it up. Or being bit by a snake. But we don't have checkpoints. I'm out here in the woods. You know, do we have checkpoints right out here? Because I'll guarantee you there's copperheads. I'll guarantee you I'm here in Central Texas. I've killed rattlesnakes in these woods. I've killed copperheads. Out at the lake, I've killed water moccasins. Should there be TSA everywhere because 500 plus people die a year or more from poisonous snake bites, more than terrorism? This idea that we're all guilty until proven innocent. This idea that government's got to be there treating you as if you're guilty up front and groping you. Think about it. Imagine growing up, if you would have heard that in the Soviet Union, which, by the way, they didn't do this, but imagine if they would have told you, in the Soviet Union, they grope you and grab your wife's breast and grab your genitals to go to a football game. How did I know all this was coming? In my film, Martial Law, 9-1 Rise of the Police State, I have state and National Guard photos from their own websites where it showed them in 2003, 4, and 5 having military out groping small children at college football games in places like Alabama and searching little 3-year-olds, little play purses. This is about indoctrinating our children and turning our country into an absolute nightmare system. And they know you need to fly for business or to see grandma who's dying of cancer. They know you want to go see the overpriced football game. We'll be right back. There's no way to describe what a con artist Al Gore is. I mean, I never even used profanity on air in 16 years, and I have to use it for him. This person, I mean, I would not buy anything from them. If they came to my door, I would call the police. I mean, Al Gore is a swollen bag of scrofulous pus. Al Gore is an anti-American globalist who's called for a post-industrial America because he has investments with Maurice Strong in China. When they shut down our industries, that increases their insider industries over there. And now he claims he controls reality. Al Gore now is running, as we speak, a 24-hour propaganda piece saying that it's a hoax that we don't believe in man-made global warming and that anyone who criticizes him works for oil companies. When we document, it is the major oil companies with Ken Lay, with Al Gore on record. That's even in the New York Times, who came up with this to shut down coal that is their competition. Now, is coal perfect? Certainly not. Do they have a lobby fighting Al Gore? Some of them, yeah. But he mixes all of this together. So I want to play this clip, but this is a guy who wants you to pay more for less. This is a guy who's a globalist and hates this country. And this is a guy who has been so full of crap through the years. Do I need to list the examples? Invented the internet. The list goes, NAFTA and GATT are a great idea. It's a good deal, Larry, on Larry King Live. We'll go ahead and go to this disgusting clip. I probably can't watch much of it.
I'm a mudslide. A forest can become kindling.
Oh.
Across the globe, cataclysmic
weather Al Gore money.
Are occurring with such regularity that it's being called a new
pay
norm.
Al Gore money and there won't be forest fires.
And there's something else.
I say it with a trendy lisp.
The truth about climate change.
The truth. I have the truth.
Big coal are spending big money.
I invented the internet.
About climate change. They've been able to do so quietly. But
no, buddy, you are the hoax.
14th. The world will
they've been able to do so quietly
of reality.
With us trying to shut them down.
Attention on the full
like 24 hours of
scale and
I'm sorry.
Of climate crisis.
24 hours of Al Gore sitting on the toilet crapping on us. Look, I can't take anymore. Shut it off. Shut it off. Shut it off. Look, the curtain's been pulled aside, little man. We know who you are. You're running a scam. You're trying to seize control of the entire society. With more on the mythical savior, the fabled man bear pig, the inventor of the internet, the gentleman that told us how great NAFTA and GATT would be and destroyed our economy, the person who owns large portions of a major oil company but lectures us all day and has palaces around the United States but tells little old ladies to cut back on their energy consumption, with more on the person who gives us the 24 hours of reality. We wouldn't have reality or any form of truth if it wasn't for our illustrious man bear pig. But the only person that can counter someone this powerful is an individual like Lord Christopher Monckton of Monckton and Brenchley, who, of course, is an inventor and researcher and scientist in his own right and a top advisor to Margaret Thatcher. Lord Monckton, thank you so much for joining us during the 24 hours of reality. Al Gore, of course, told the Aspen Club a few weeks ago that they're in deep trouble and that more and more they're basically being laughed at. I've seen him on another stage talking to pundits about it. Their hoax is imploding, so now they're claiming that our response to them is a hoax. You have been the chief individual exposing the true fraud. So has Man Bear Pig gotten to the precipice or has he already fallen from it?
Well, Al Gore is all over the floor, and this relaunch, like everything else he touches, has turned out to be a spectacular failure, Alex, because why did he choose September the 14th? Well, the answer's quite easy, really. It is that that was the day on which he had hoped that the sea ice extent in the Arctic would have fallen to a new low in the 30-year satellite record. Trouble was, it didn't. He thought it was going to. He planned today to say, I told you so, it's all happening, the Arctic ice is melting, and in fact, of course, it hasn't happened. It's quite some way above where it was this time in 2007, which was the record low, and it appears already to have turned the corner. And from now on, of course, as the winter gathers strength in the Northern Hemisphere, so the sea ice will grow back just as it always does. So he got that wrong, and frankly, he knows that despite the billions, and it's now actually 100 billion, that has been spent in the United States alone on promoting this global warming rubbish, the people aren't buying it anymore. Every time there's an extreme weather event, a drought in Texas, a few tornadoes, a bit of rain from the back end of a hurricane in New York, up in New York State, immediately Al Gore is there saying this is global warming. Except that the record of hurricanes over the last few years has been less activity than at any time in the satellite record.
That's what I was about to say. And it's also come out that his film is lying. Polar bears are great swimmers. Their numbers have exploded. The Himalayas haven't melted. Kilimanjaro is coming back. And I just saw on mainstream news, I should have had the article yesterday. In fact, I'll show it later if we can dig it out, that they admitted that this is one of the earliest times that the shrinkage has actually stopped and reversed back to growing. So that parlor trick of showing a satellite image of one of the poles during the summer when it starts shrinking and implying that it's all about to disappear when we know that it is a cyclical season thing, that huge fraud is imploding. And now, as you know, Der Spiegel last week came out and said, well, actual sea levels are dropping now. That's the global warming when Al Gore promised that we'd already be underwater.
That's quite right. And indeed, earlier this year, I published a paper by Professor Niklas Murner, who is the ranking world expert on sea level, and the title of the paper was Sea Level is Not Rising. And this was in the spring, so he was well ahead of the curve here. And when he was due to introduce this paper at a Cambridge University climate conference that I was helping to organize, the organizers banned him from distributing the paper because they were so furious at the title, Sea Level is Not Rising. And of course, ever since then, it's been dropping like a stone. And the excuse of the usual suspect is that this is because global warming has meant more rainfall, and therefore all the rain has gone on the land and it will eventually flow back into the ocean and the ocean will rise again. But frankly, these excuses that Gore and others come up with are beginning to wear terribly thin. And that the truth of the matter is that by a number of different measures, it's now been pretty well established that if we were to double the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere between now and the end of the century, that might cause maybe 1 Celsius of warming. That at the moment is most people's best guess, not the 3 or 4 or 6 or 11 that Gore and his mates have been saying. 1 Celsius, and that's harmless. And even if you wanted to try to stop the 3 or 4 or 6 Celsius that they have been trying to say will happen, it's 10 times cheaper to take the really rather small damage that such warming would cause than it is to try to make it go away.
But Lord Monckton, you've broken these numbers down. I mean, you don't like to toot your horn, but you've been a trailblazer. They've talked about your arrest in Europe, saying that you're a climate denier. He is now running promo videos. I couldn't watch much of the 24-hour garbage, but I did watch some of it. But I watched the promo videos saying, we're going after the deniers. Obama has launched this attack watch group that says report people to the authorities that criticize Obama. I mean, it seems they're really trying to go into an authoritarian mode. And he says, how dare them in this promo video say that carbon dioxide isn't a pollutant, the evil oil companies. But in truth, most of the big oil companies have actually been on the bandwagon for a while, and they want to use it to shut down their competition in coal. So that's another lie. What can you say about this call to criminally, because now it's happening to myself, to criminally come after us for denying our high priest Al Gore? A, I want you to comment on that. And then B, how high have, from ice core samples, carbon dioxide levels been in the past versus now?
Okay, hold on to your hats and let's do that second question first. If we go back to the Neoproterozoic era, which is 750 million years ago, you're too young to remember, Alex, at that time there was 30% CO2 in the atmosphere. How do we know? Because it was at that time that the dolomitic rocks were formed, and dolomitic rock can only form if it precipitates out from the sea, if there is a partial pressure of CO2 above the sea of at least 30%. We can tell this by doing experiments in the laboratory, so we know that.
Lord Monckton, specifically, you always go over the scientific evidence, and you always repeat it over and over again, and you've been proven in your reports time and time again. I can't think of a time that I've seen you really be mistaken, because you're going off scientific research and facts that are available. 2 years ago, the ClimateGate emails come out where they're lying and organizing the structure and their different grants around the world to do this. We know that their agenda is a power grab, and to be able to shut down competition that isn't part of their inside little club. But now, I mean, if you even look at the plans they want, and this is what I've been successful talking to their cult followers with, is to explain, if China's building multiple new coal power plants a week, and we can't even build really any here a year, and they're shutting down old ones, and ours are much cleaner than China, and it's one world, well, then why is shutting down our plants and moving them to China, where they're even dirtier, going to help? And they go, wow, that's a really good point. I mean, getting all the science aside, their solutions of paying Al Gore and Lord Rothschild carbon money is not going to fix anything, and it just allows them to turn the green police loose on the general public. And it's nothing but a fascistic power grab. And I think at the end of the day, that's the key.
This is quite right. I mean, I've got a paper out for review at the moment with the Journal of Energy Policy, which goes into this very question of just how useless it actually is if you try to make global warming go away. And just for the sake of the argument, I've pretended, even though I don't believe a word of it, that the amount of warming we're likely to get is going to be as big as the usual suspects pretend that it is. I said, okay, let's go along with the so-called official figures. And then let's look at the solutions, such as the ones you've just talked about. Close down all the clean coal-fired power stations in the West, open lots of filthy ones in China. How does that improve the planet? What I've done is to work out how much it's going to cost to make just 1 Celsius of global warming go away, if you follow the measures to reduce CO2 emissions that they are recommending. And the answer is, it's 10 times more expensive than it would be to sit back, enjoy the sunshine, and put up with such relatively small damage as might occur if the global warming happened at the rate which they forecast, which it won't. And this is the kind of conversation, to use a word that Al Gore frequently comes up with, this is the kind of conversation that Al Gore won't have. Al, baby, you're still running from me. You can run, but you can't hide. I'm coming to get you. It's no good standing there like a sort of high priest. And a conversation is a two-sided process, Al, baby. And if you won't debate with me or anyone who understands the science or economics behind this garbage of yours, then nobody but nobody is going to believe you anymore. Your day is done.
Well, Lord Monckton, you're too kind to Al Gore. You say he thought that the ice caps would really melt. He thought sea levels were going to rise. He thought it'd be 10 degrees hotter and we'd all be dead. This guy's always changing his story. As you know, 30 years ago, they were saying it was global freezing at the Club of Rome. They cold-bloodedly, if you read the Richard N. Haas CFR reports and others, say decades ago that they were going to use this to organize society for a global government. They're now using the banking crisis that they engineered to try to now transfer the euro into an even more dictatorial system, complete with euro football teams, which I know you've talked about world government. I mean, I really think my only criticism of you is that you're too gentlemanly and you're being too kind. This is not someone who's wrong. I will call him for what he is, a criminal con artist who wants to commit genocide. He knows full well, with the state of her memorandums like 200, that if they put those carbon taxes in on the third world, it's a death sentence in the next decade, as you've documented, for 1 billion people. This is a Hitler in waiting, and I will call him for what he is. Bottom line, in your view, is Al Gore conscious of this?
I think Al Gore knows quite well that he's got this wrong. I don't think he ever really intended to get it right. I think you are correct. Right from the start, his agenda was to force a particular result on the community, whether it was true or not. In June 1988, he waited until a particularly hot day in that particularly hot month. He then had the air conditioning turned off in Congress that day when his friend and financial benefactor, James Hansen, testified that the rate of warming was going to be, as it turns out, four times greater than it actually has been. And so it was all designed to terrify Congress, to fool them into going along with this rubbish. And of course, for a time, he was successful. But the virtue, I think, Alex, of the still small voice of calm that I try to represent here, just going at them time and time again on the science, pointing out that the science doesn't say what they say it says. It doesn't say we've definitely got a problem. It increasingly says we definitely haven't got a problem. That even if the science were not to say that, the economists who have examined this are nearly unanimous in the peer-reviewed literature, saying that it's cheaper to do nothing than to lift a finger now. That is the clear advice of Bjorn Lomborg, Richard Toll, William Nordhaus, David Henderson. I could go on naming them all day. If you do science by consensus, which you and I don't, well, let's just tell the other side, because they do, the consensus in the economic peer-reviewed literature is that even if the problem is as big as they say it is scientifically, it's cheaper to do nothing about it at all. There are many real problems around the world. There's still far too much starvation, poverty, and disease, which we could be getting rid of instead.
Yes, sir.
With these billions on all this rubbish.
Lord Monckton, in closing, it's important to give out some of your websites that have just incredible research. They're available for everyone. But in closing, sir, specifically looking into the future by going back to the past, just 2 years ago, there was still a fake consensus in the big corporate dominant media that no real scientist disagreed with what Al Gore said, and he was the high priest, almost like the voice of God speaking to Moses. 2 short years later, they're a laughingstock, and I've seen Al Gore in speeches and interviews where even his fellow travelers in this power grab say, my friends laugh at me, even liberals do. And I'm a talk radio host, I do a lot of interviews, I talk to people on the street. I would say their cult has shrunk by about 90%, and they're in deep trouble. So where do we, I mean, A, do you agree with that? And B, where do we go from here? How are they going to try to regroup, and how do we finally put this monstrosity into the dust heap, the grave of frauds?
Right. I think nothing is really going to stop until somebody gets prosecuted. The fact is, there's enough bogus science out there, people producing deliberately false results in the IPCC's documents for interest, a very good example. It's now very clear. But if we're going to stop them, we've got to put one or two of these bogus scientists behind bars. Now, let me be clear about this. If you're producing honest science that says you think we've got a problem, that's fine by me. You do the science and we can talk about it. But if you're producing bogus science and you're bending the data and using dodgy statistical techniques and you know who you are, then we are now coming after you.
Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
We are now into the second hour of this worldwide broadcast. We're going to be going back to your calls, Micah, Michael, Steve, Ken, and others. We are joined by Alfred Adask, who we had on, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, when 60 Minutes had a special about himself and others, just demonizing him like he's incredibly evil. And then all he does is talk about the Constitution, Bill of Rights, common sense. And, of course, we discussed then the fact that they're rebranding terrorism off of Al-Qaeda over to domestic groups that want to get our republic back. And his website is adask.wordpress.com. Here's his bio. I'm Alfred Adask and the author of virtually all of the text published on this website. And then it just goes into all the things that he's done over the years fighting the globalists. So we're going to be talking to him for the rest of the hour and taking your calls. And then I've got news items. I want to get his take on things happening in the news and what he thinks of the globalists, because they know that their vaccines are killing people. They openly now admit that the government's growing the opium in Afghanistan and shipping it into the U.S. and having the troops grow it. It came out in federal court in Chicago. This is, again, is in the El Paso Times, Narcosphere News. It's up on Infowars.com. Federal filing where when they bust these narco-terrorists now, they're bringing into court the fact that they work for the CIA bringing narcotics in. And the federal government's saying, yes, national security, it's true, but still we want them to go to jail. That's kind of like Hal Turner, who attacked me for like a decade, saying I was covering up for Israel when we're critical of Israel. And he used to work with Sean Hannity, and he would say, kill this federal judge, get that federal judge, this judge needs to die and never get in trouble. And I said, that guy's a Fed. And I said, you better watch it, buddy. They'll set you up. Well, people hacked his email and got his emails from the FBI where they were handling him. And so he was no longer useful, so they put him in jail. And what he's facing the trial right now for stuff he was ordered to do on record. And the FBI came in and said, Mr. Turner is our highest level national security operative. Not an agent, but he does work in our employ. And but go ahead and put him in prison. See, that's a message all you guys need to get through your head. The Sinaloa drug cartel head is in the news. Here it is right here in my little hand. It's up on Infowars.com with a link to the federal filing. You'll be on the federal court's website. And they're like, yeah, we brought in tens of tons of cocaine. Yeah, we're shipping guns into Mexico, Honduras. We're shipping them into Illinois, Texas, Florida, California. That's now all mainstream news. And nobody gets in trouble except their own minions. So we're talking about a synthesis of evil that runs our society. You see, you could have an emperor, philosopher, king who wanted to build public works, wanted to educate people, and wanted to build a civilization. And we've seen maybe 20 cases of that or less in 6,000 years of recorded history. And you'll see civilizations leap forward under that because they actually take the largesse and actually build things for populations. But what happens is, and have a vision, and try to bring science to the public, the problem is they always die. And maybe their son isn't as bad, but the grandson's a psychopath. And then he has an even crazier son. And pretty soon it's Roman emperors marrying their horse. Caligula would march the horse in. It would go to the bathroom. He'd have the high priest read it like tea leaves. I'm not joking. This is mainline history. They normally gut a bull and read the guts or spill the blood all over them. And how the splatters were, they would then pour tin. But he made them worship the horse's dung, basically, just as an act of power, an act of insanity, or burn part of the city for fun like Nero and get so decadent they commit suicide. This is what happens. The worst of the worst get in control, and you get a Stalin, a Hitler, a Mao, I mean, a Pol Pot that Zbigniew Brzezinski bragged he supported, who killed 30% plus of the people of Cambodia. And then Brzezinski writes books bragging. They brag whenever a Brzezinski walks into a globalist meeting. They're like, oh, your graciousness. They get off on how many deaths they've committed. So that's my view on their philosophy. There really isn't a philosophy at all. It's just trampling and being trampled. Always pressing on the nerve of power. We're the priest of power, Winston. In fact, later I want to read it. We'll hold it to ask into the next hour to give him the full time here because I'm on a roll, but will you print me from 1984? You can just type in Winston, picture a boot stomping on a human face forever. It's about 10 paragraphs above that and about five below that. I want to read that later because that describes the full globalist system. It's a world built by sadists and psychopaths to carry out always greater and greater dumbing down and ugliness because it's beautiful to them. Liberty and independence is anathema. It's like nails on a chalkboard to these people. Alfred Adass, good to have you here with us. Give us your view on the philosophy of the parasites and what they're building and your fight against them.
Well, I can tell you that it's good to be here. First off, Alex, I appreciate you having me on. But I was one of seven defendants that were sued back in, the case started in 2001. I wasn't added until 2006. I was the last of seven defendants sued for the manufacture and distribution of a controlled substance. And the controlled substance was colloidal silver. All right, it wasn't heroin or cocaine or something like that, or methamphetamine.
That I can buy at HEB and Whole Foods here in Austin right now.
That's exactly right. And I volunteered to be fiduciary for a trust. The trust was one of the defendants in the case. They made me a defendant. We were threatened with fines. Each defendant, $25,000 per day. That's $9 million per year. I read the relevant case, and I guarantee being sued for $9 million a year focuses your attention. And I read the relevant law. And what we discovered, I read the definition of drugs in both the state and federal health code. And this goes to your notion about what their philosophy is. The Texas Attorney General wrote in part in his case, he said, the key to this case lies in determining at law, not as a matter of fact, whether the defendant's colloidal products met the definition of drug when mislabeled. And then he quotes from the Texas Health and Safety Code, section 431.002, subparagraph 14, which defines the word drug. And it says, drug means article recognized, the United States Pharmacopoeia National Formulary, any supplement to it, articles designed or intended for the use in the diagnosis, cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of disease in man or other animals. Now, I saw that, and the first thing I thought is, my God, why the people are damn crazy. The people who wrote this thing don't understand English. When they say man or other animals, they're not saying man or animals. They're saying man or other animals, which means they deem man to be an animal.
And what you discovered is something we similarly discovered decades ago, and for all of us, we discovered this in different ways. In hundreds of globalist documents, and documents going back thousands of years, all governments that oppress, Hitler did it, the Babylonians did it, the Israelites did it, they would always list the slaves as non-human. We listed blacks as non-human. It's a legalese. They see themselves as exalted and awake, and that's what they mean in the movie They Live. When you have the glasses, they say, I've got one that can see. When you actually converse with a globalist in person, they shake in fear because they'll say, oh, you're a human. And that's what Frank Herbert wrote about in Dune, is that the elite don't see most of us as human. Go ahead.
Well, first time I saw it, I just thought it was a mistake. Then they said man or other animals a second time in the same definition. Then I read the federal code at Title 21, Section 321, subparagraph G, subsection or subsection G, subparagraph 1. And it says, again, virtually identical definition of drugs. Drugs are for man or other animals. What we did, I realized that they are treating it, the presumption for these definitions is that we are animals. And I also understand enough about the Bible where I know that at Genesis chapter 1, sections 26 through 28, it says, on the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals.
From Austin, Texas, broadcasting worldwide, it's Alex Jones. It's a reliable source of information. 50,000
unstoppable watts. We are back live here, my friends, and I do want to get to Mike Hub and Ken and Michael and many others that are patiently holding here in just a few minutes. I should add that we are seeing something really historical happening right now. watching CNBC, listening to Bloomberg on radio, reading all their statements. We knew this was coming more than a decade ago, but we're now seeing it. And after bailout in Europe, they're not bailouts. They're government taxes paid directly to the big six private megabanks. And each time it happens, the countries get more in debt because the countries go in debt to give the money to the private central banks. That's why they don't just monetize and give it to the banks to get the money off their books that then causes inflation. But that's still a better thing than publicly raising taxes, cutting infrastructure to implode the economy, and then paying that to the banks, who are the ones you're bailing out. It's so simple, it's complex. They're the ones that engage in the fraud. You're bailing them out, but then you owe them money because you bailed them out, because they're the people that authorize your government, the euro, the dollar, you name it, to issue the currency. Now, they're openly saying the problem is the Germans won't vote for this and have had two elections since the bailout started and they're about to get rid of Merkel. And I've heard them on CNBC and Bloomberg say it's terrible that there's democracy. Of course, really, it should be a republic. But the point is, they're saying it's too bad the people can vote because this is going to cause a world depression. Now, they've already maneuvered us to a world depression. But they then destroy confidence by saying the markets are down because the people aren't bailing us out. But the new third bailout isn't a bailout. It's transferring what's left of national sovereignty through the euro to this private banking system. So here is world government run by private corporations that have created the crisis, openly holding Europe hostage while they have their banker chiefs go out and destroy confidence. Same thing that was done to get the Super Congress passed here. Same thing that was done for the bailout. Alfred, watching this, what's your view on how things are going for the New World Order?
Well, I think they're desperate. I think things are, I can't remember the name. One of the former secretaries of state criticized Bush during when Bush first botched the invasion of Iraq and got bogged down there. I can't think of the man's name, but he says you've set the New World Order back 30 years. All right. I think these people know they're on the ropes. You quoted earlier where Hillary Clinton said they're losing the information war. All right. The information battle. I think they know they're on the ropes and they are desperate and they are pushing as hard as they can to make this happen before it all blows up in their face. We're in a situation where it's like two railroad trains coming for the same crossing and both of them are trying to go as fast as they can to get there first and get through without getting hit. But we'll see. We're coming for a we are approaching a great collision, and we'll see how it unfolds.
We're going to see staged terror attacks, new wars, bioweapon releases.
Yep.
We are entering a time of some of the greatest tumult and upheaval this earth has ever seen in human activities. And by the way, that was Brent Scrocoft, former National Security Advisor to George Herbert Walker Bush, that did say George W. Bush had set the New World Order back 30 years. And so it's like NASCAR. They were three laps ahead of us. But since the globalists have gotten caught lying about WMD, staging 9/11 and other events, they are now only about a car link ahead of us. Mm-hmm. Their tires are bald. They're almost out of gas. And there's smoke coming out from under the hood.
Yeah. I understand. We are at the little man behind the curtain moment, all right? People are beginning to understand that this thing has been run by a relatively small group of people who can be had if we want to stand up and do something about it. I listened to one of your ads earlier before I got on, at least, and you were talking about a food crisis. Let me ask you, do you know who the first economist was?
There have been quite a few, but tell me.
Joseph in the Bible goes all the way back to 1800 BC, and you can read about it in Genesis chapter 47. This relates to the food crisis. This is a little bit long, but this relates to the food crisis. And what Genesis 47, it talks about Joseph in the Old Testament where...
Wasn't he telling the Egyptians the whole story about, you know, he had the dream and you've got to have 7 years of grain cooked back because of the famine?
Yep. Yep, that's it. But the way I was taught it when I went to Bible school as a kid is Joseph, he knew there were going to be 7 good years and then there are going to be 7 bad years. And therefore, he saved up the extra grain in the 7 good years so the people would have grain in the 7 bad years. That's not true. Here's what happened, and you can read this in Genesis chapter 47. And it says, and there was no bread in all the land, for the famine was sore, and it was very sore, and that the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan faded by reason of famine. In other words, we're into the 7 bad years. Now, Joseph had stored up grain in the 7 good years, but when the 7 bad years came, here it says Genesis 47:14, and Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and the land of Canaan for the grain which they brought. And Joseph brought the money into the Pharaoh's house. And when the money was all spent in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came unto Joseph and said, give us bread, for why should we die in thy presence? For our money faileth. What they didn't understand, Joseph was selling grain. He wasn't giving it to the people. He knew there was going to be a shortage. He cornered the market on grain because he knew famine was coming. Then he sold the grain in the first year for money. He took all the money. He gave it to the Pharaoh. It moved into the money's house, into the Pharaoh's house. They took it out of circulation. And without money, the people could not work effectively to work their way through the famine. This reminds me of 1933, our government took the gold out of circulation. And in 1968, they took the silver out of circulation. And in that regard, they are paralleling what Joseph did 3,800 years ago. And it goes on, the second year, Joseph, they come back and they say, we need some more food. Joseph said, give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle, he'll mean give you grain, if the money failed. He knew it failed because he took it out of circulation. The people sold all their cattle in the second year to Joseph. In the third year, they came back. They were hungry again. They needed more. And this time, they sold themselves into slavery and all of their land to Pharaoh.
And that's exactly what the bankers have done. We're entering that's the third exactly year. And every time we get in trouble, they bail us out by us bailing them out. We give them our money. I mean, this is all scientifically done, and I tell you, Alfred, I learned very few new things from guests, and I'm learning stuff from you today.
Well, I'll tell you, that Genesis 47 is just astonishing. You read it, and you read it closely, you realize, my God, they're explaining how economics works, and they understood it 3,800 years ago. I don't think it's an accident that a modern economics text is almost impossible to understand. I don't think they want you to understand it. Joseph understood economics. You take the money out of circulation, corner the market on food, and you can put the people into bondage.
And let me stop you there. They've taken the money and put it in Pharaoh's house. For 3 years now, they've taken $16 trillion domestically, the tens of trillions that went overseas. Bloomberg says it's more like $28 trillion. Other economists I have on say it's more like $18 trillion. Whatever. They've taken the tens of trillions of our money that we've got to pay taxes on and interest. They've given it to the mega families. But people are worried about inflation. It hasn't been that bad yet because they hoarded it and did not loan it back. So they put us under great bondage of debts that's fraudulent. Yep. They put us under taxes, under austerity, which they know kills the economy. All these other independent economists are saying, why are you doing this? This is killing the economy. They further put us under the famine while they fully control all the money, holding it in Pharaoh's house, and then come back and say, give us absolute power in a private corporate world government and we'll fix it. And the people give them even more power and it doesn't. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, they don't want people here in Egypt. The globalists want us dead. They want the entire land. They don't want our oxen. They don't want our children. They don't want our women. They want us all wiped out and dead. New world order, fait accompli, total domination, end game.
I agree. And, you know, you mentioned food crisis. They've taken the money away. If they can shut the food supply down under the pretext of an economic collapse or whatever, I guarantee you people will follow this government to get themselves a bowl of rice. They'll do whatever is required to stay alive. They did it 3,800 years ago. Joseph did it, and it's right there in the Bible if you care to read it, and they are on the verge of perhaps doing the same thing, or at least attempting to do the same thing today.
Is
It's InfoWars Nightly News. If you believe in this information and want to help make it become even more effective, you support us and you buy war bonds in the InfoWar against tyrants by subscribing at PrisonPlanet.tv. Here is the report.
Recently, as a reporter for InfoWars, I tried to log back into Facebook and it wouldn't let me. It wanted me to identify myself not with my passcode, but by showing me obscure pictures of my friends and family. I had the feeling that it had something to do with testing their face recognition technology, and then I saw this article in the Wall Street Journal. We know governments are quietly using face scanning cameras on street corners and in airports, and they have license plate scanners, but how are they going to get the public to openly accept a surveillance society? Well, Facebook recently teamed up with CBS to promote their new fall drama, Person of Interest, to condition people to opt in to their face recognition program. They know who these people are and what their names are, and they want you to confirm it for them. Sure, the security measure confirms who I am, but it also confirms for them who my friends and family are. So I went out to the street to find out what people had to say about all this.
I tried to log on from a different computer that I never used before.
Oh.
And Facebook prompted me to say, look, we want you to go through a series of face recognition.
The questions and like showing you the pictures of your friends and
stuff. And they want you to identify all those pictures of your friends.
I guess it's just a privacy and like more of a protective measure because I know people's accounts get hacked a lot. So maybe they're trying to actually help us out by giving us a little quiz.
I think I was talking about where they show you pictures and it's like, oh, is this person? And you're supposed to confirm it. I think that's really weird. I know it's used as a tool just to make it easier to tag people, but I've never heard of it being used to get you to like get back into your page.
You feel comfortable with the fact that Facebook is data mining all your personal and private information, including, you know, your friends and family's activities?
I mean, I can't say that that's comfortable, but I think anything that you put up on the internet is up for public scrutiny.
I'm not comfortable with that at all. Although I know they're doing it, and I wonder exactly what they're doing with all the information.
The government agencies realize that it's a good way to, you know, pick up on things that they don't like or especially illicit activities.
You should, you know, keep your settings on private, and you should be careful with what you post on there.
Getting used to, I guess, our privacy diminishing a little bit.
I'm just not going to be very informative on Facebook anymore. No, untag myself from every post that I've ever been in.
Some people are concerned that Facebook, it might be used to acclimate the public into accepting a surveillance society.
Absolutely. I definitely think that while it might not be intentionally so, it could be intentionally so, but it's definitely serving as that.
I think it is getting us acclimated to a surveillance world.
That sounds a bit 1984 and creepy.
People are getting really used to sharing all kinds of information, putting everything about their entire life online.
We're putting a lot of information in a public sphere, and that information is accessible to anyone.
I think it's definitely acclimating people.
Who knows if that could be used for good, to hold us to a higher standard, or for something else. It's really about what we do with it.
I personally love Facebook, and it's just a way for me to keep in contact with my friends who live all over the world. And for anyone to use that for, like, keeping track of people, I think that's just really creepy, actually. I don't feel comfortable with that.
It's incredible. Internet kill switches, cybersecurity, the takeover of the web, warrantless wiretapping. This is America 10 years after 9/11, and it has nothing to do with keeping us safe. Zuckerman, the owner of Facebook, insultingly called his own users dumb Fs. But worst of all, once you've posted your photos and your personal data on Facebook, they say they own it forever. You can make your account private, but it's always there. They're using it. Social networks like Twitter, Facebook, and all of it, they have deep government ties. Google was set up with funding from NQTEL, a company whose main client is the CIA.
As Wayne Madsen reports, the CIA has always used the popular media of the day to push their propaganda. And today we see Facebook expanding their face recognition capabilities. I'm Darren McBreen for InfoWars Nightly News.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center and the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back. It's InfoWars Nightly News on this Tuesday, September 13th, 2011 edition. The Health Ranger, Mike Adams, is going to be joining us in a moment to break down some of the stories that we're about to start covering here. TSA creator says dismantle, privatize the agency. Rick Perry is being attacked in every single debate he's in about trying to lie and force Texas schoolgirls to take a dangerous vaccine linked to many deaths and illnesses and other complications during the trials. There were even more deaths once he tried to mandate it. And so he's being torn up in the debates. And more good news is coming out as all the candidates basically turn against him, showing that our ideas that were laughed at 4 or 5 years ago when they were causing deaths in the trials are now becoming mainstream because we have facts and the truth on our side. It's also coming out that Merck paid legislators to pass mandatory Gardasil vaccine bill. And the numbers have come out, what they paid for the yes votes. We're talking $2,000 to $3,000 per person in the California legislature, some as low as just $1,000 to do this, when they make over $500 for the three rounds of shots. So you invest a couple $100,000 to buy all the legislatures off in a state, all the legislators, and then you get hundreds of millions, if not billions, per state by having them mandated. Also, SaneVax, Inc., reports that they found human papilloma RNA and DNA contamination in Gardasil to now have a FDA investigation. They are requesting that that happen, and that's out on the Business Wire today. So we're on the march. The empire is on the run. But the first reason I've got Mike Adams joining us tonight here at InfoWars Nightly News, 7 o'clock weeknights here at PrisonPlanet.tv, is to get into this report. Because I read the whole thing this morning, and we posted it on InfoWars.com as well as first finding it at NaturalNews.com. And I found the research was really spot on from my own research. NASA's come out. The military, the Pentagon has come out. Big corporations have come out. And they say the biggest national security threat to this country and the rest of the world right now is solar flares. The sun was really active a decade ago. It went somewhat dormant and now is back with a vengeance. And these are solar flares, tens of millions of miles long, thousands of times bigger than the Earth. And already just a few weeks ago, we had major cities on the West Coast with no power because of it. And they say even bigger ones are coming. And so this is a huge event. And the reason it's so important from my perspective is the system has got us so afraid of terrorists, whether it's real or manufactured, and you've got a better chance of dying by being struck by lightning, by even shark attack, honeybee attack, snake bite, than you do being killed by terrorists. So why is there all this, oh my gosh, we've got to have checkpoints everywhere and search everybody or Al-Qaeda is going to kill us? Since when do we become land of the cowards, home of the slaves? You know, old-timers knew, don't be a coward, because when your time comes, son, nobody can stop it. A solar flare could burn this planet to a crisp. But statistically, that's probably not what's going to happen, thank God. Statistically, it could cause electromagnetic pulse, much more powerful than any weapon system, and knock out every nuclear reactor on the planet or on the side of the planet facing the sun that's in daylight when the flare hits. And we already saw a big weapons plant that was mixing uranium and plutonium in France explode yesterday. They said, don't worry, there's no radiation, but there were some deaths. Just like they lied to us for several months. Remember that? They lied to us for more than 3 months, saying there's no high radiation, there's been no meltdowns. Turns out 5 of the 6 reactors in Japan at Fukushima completely melted down. I knew that 3 days in when reactor number 3 with MOX fuel, plutonium, blew up, and I blew up the video and saw what looked like rods. I went and looked at the manufacturer of that 40-year-old General Electric system and learned that that was a rod casing. not just from the rods stored on top, but internal rods. It completely blew sky high. They knew the isotopes showed there'd been a total meltdown, the biggest disaster in human history with nuclear systems. And our government's answer was raise the levels of what they say is safe radiation. So that's my commentary on the situation. Now, to go through it all is just a great patriot, somebody who is just doing so much wonderful work. Out of all the great people out there fighting corruption, I've got to say Mike Adams is right up there at the top from Natural News. Of course, he is the health ranger. And we're going to go through all of this, the solar flares, the vaccines, the TSA, and the fact that he narrowly has survived. You're talking just 100 yards away, helicopters dumping, putting out fires. So he can't be in studio because he's still got the fires at bay as he lives outside Austin, ravaged. Mike Adams, great to have you here with us.
Yeah, Alex, great to be joining you. Thanks for having me on.
Mike, I've thrown out all these issues. What do you want to tackle first?
Well, let's talk about the solar flares. And now segueing from the fires of Central Texas, which were quite devastating, you know, I'm into personal preparedness, as you are, and most of your listeners are. But when those fires hit, I realized I had a huge gap in my preparedness plan. I did not have a fire respirator and fire gear. So I immediately made sure that I had that covered. And then, so I actually ordered products and got them in. And now I can actually fight fires to some degree that are in my front yard if I have to. But then I also began to ask questions, where else do I have gaps in personal preparedness? What are the real risks to safety, to growing food, to surviving on our planet? Now, you hinted at this. One of the things that the U.S. government does just maliciously and insidiously is they make people think that things that aren't dangerous are very, very dangerous, like so-called terrorism. And then at the same time, they ignore the things that are really dangerous and make them seem like they're not dangerous at all, like Fukushima, for example, or now what is theoretically a big risk of a big risk in our lifetime, not today, not tomorrow, but over a human lifetime. It's a very real risk that a solar flare could knock out the power grid, and it could knock it out for years in some places, and it could disconnect power from the nuclear facilities that are trying to run coolant pumps to keep their fuel rods from going into a meltdown status.
Well, that's right, Mike. We are such a dependent society now, and technology is great, but it's a double-edged sword. It took 80 years or more to build our modern system. And when a little tornado comes through or hurricane, you can have places out for 3-4 months, and it's a national effort to get it back up. But if you have widespread systems knocked out, then it causes a cascading where you're literally knocked back to the Stone Age. And you're right.
Yes.
They estimate, because they've been studying the sun for more than 300 years in a modern scientific fashion, that these solar flares are a 100-year event. The problem is, it appears we're entering one of those in the next decade. So you're right. It's a once-in-a-lifetime deal, but we're here. And 100 years ago, we didn't have these systems to be knocked out. But if you go back 100 years ago, there were events with solar flares that did blow out some of the early cities that did have electrical systems, and it's happening now. And it's not just you saying this.
No, not at all. NASA has put out information about this. Oak Ridge National Laboratory has actually calculated the risk of a large solar flare knocking out a nuclear facility. And it calculated that risk as being 33% over the 40-year lifetime of a typical nuclear power plant. So that's a one-third or 33 in 100 chance for every nuclear facility that exists out there. But the really, well, you could say good news or bad news is that these events, and the last big one was called the Carrington event in 1859. So that's pre-modern technology, that's pre-electrical grid for the most part, and that's pre-nuclear power plants all over the country.
Still made wash lines outside in some areas literally light up with electricity.
Exactly. They had telegraph lines, and power surged through the telegraph lines and actually lit up. And they could disconnect their batteries, and they could still send telegraphs in some areas because there was so much power surging through these lines. But modern civilization, with its reliance on nuclear power, and there are well over 400 nuclear power plants operating every day around the world, this system has never faced a Carrington scale event.
mean, the establishment has known at least in the last 50, 60 years about this electromagnetic pulse and other things that the sun can cause, and they've made no preparation except in their systems. And this is almost like a nuclear war level type crisis, because we've got 7 billion people, more than half of them, totally urban and dependent on technology. And if we were to have even a partial knockout, I mean, this is catastrophic.
Well, yeah, it's not just losing electricity and losing the satellites and losing the power grid. It's the fact that hundreds of nuclear power plants could then go into a meltdown situation and unleash Fukushima scale events times hundreds, which would irradiate the soils, irradiate the oceans, irradiate the atmosphere, and it would make human life on our planet virtually unlivable for perhaps a year, perhaps a couple of years.
Exactly. That's why I called it as bad as a nuclear war, not being clear. You're absolutely right. Now, and again, and the government admits this themselves, and major corporations, and you source it all in your article. You're not speculating here. Why do you think there's this irrational chutzpah or bravado in the establishment? I mean, even after Fukushima has been for 6 months raining radiation down, California as far east as Vermont, many levels higher in isotopes, in milk, in lettuce. And their answer was, we'll just raise the isotope between 1,000 times and 100,000 times, depending on what isotope, and just wave a wand and say it's safe. So do they really believe if they just say reactors exploding and radiating us, if they just wave it and say everything's fine? I mean, I'm all into technology. And I know they've even have a lot of cleaner, safer nuclear technologies, but there's no attempt to move to those. They're building more of the old designs. I mean, what's wrong with these people? With the GMO, with the nuclear weapons, with all of it, it's like they want to destroy us.
Well, you're exactly right. There are nuclear power designs that can passively cool the fissionable materials without using electric pumps, but those designs have not been incorporated widely or at all, actually. So that has been abandoned. Instead, they favor the General Electric designs that require more pumps and more maintenance and more upkeep. But overall, there is an inherent arrogance in the scientific community, not only when it comes to nuclear power, but also medicine. There's an arrogance about vaccines, that vaccines have to work, and they must work because we say they do, not because of any evidence.
I mean, doctors have one of the highest suicide rates. They have one of the lowest life expectancies. It's the same with top scientists. You meet these people, and they're usually neurotic and literally think they're geniuses. And when you talk to them, they're only smart in a specialized area. They don't have general knowledge. Now, I meet other scientists and people that have general knowledge, and they're tuned in and awake. But it seems like the establishment goes for this centralized type, arrogant, know-it-all person.
Yeah, that's exactly what's out there. And that's what's dominated the vaccine industry. That is what has dominated even the energy industries. You know, science has a lot of promise, but it has also given us, sadly, a lot of circle the wagons, circular logic, the self-supporting scientists who abandon ideas that should really be able to help us, such as, for example, free energy technology, which I believe exists. We know cold fusion
or
exists.
Or even regular off the grid. They won't come and inspect and give you the permit in most states.
That's right.
If you have your own off the grid, they'll harass you. But, oh, everything's government paid for if you tie into the grid. Well, now you're still part of the grid. And I think that's one of the big drivers. There's a lot of reasons here, but I want your take on this and we'll get into other issues. Because big corporations, and I'm all for free market, but these are monopoly men, invest in different technological ideas. Once they invest in it, there can't ever be any oversight. They can't ever admit dangers because now it's seen simply as a product.
Well, that's right. And what's really astonishing is that by running our world on these dangerous nuclear power designs, they're putting human civilization in grave danger. They're risking everything. They're risking the future of human life on our planet in order to protect their corporate profits and the nuclear power industry. We need to dismantle. I mean, I've never been an opponent of nuclear power just to be an opponent of it. But now understanding this risk of a solar flare and how it could cascade into the power systems, I think we must really look at changing nuclear power to a passive cooling design or dismantling the existing power structures.
Look, this is a 1940s type system. It's extremely dangerous. It's a huge industry now in nuclear weapons and the rest of it. That's why they go with the old reactor systems, is so they get fissile material to build more weapons.
That's right.
And they're destroying our entire future. You know, Dr. Busby, who advises the EU and the British government, he said a lot of his colleagues think they're doing all of this to reduce fertility, because they know fertility has plunged everywhere where you have nuclear reactors, and also the development of the fuel. And so this is all part of a larger eugenics operation. It's clear now, with the disaster in the last year, yesterday in France, the disaster in Canada that got no attention, the 50s disaster in Simi Valley that was bigger than Chernobyl that was covered up, Chernobyl, Fukushima, and government then trying to lie, getting caught, and no one even gets in trouble. At least the Japanese resigned. Here they would be promoted like 9/11. It's time to get rid of nuclear power. It's time to get it out of the ships.
I totally agree.
The boats. It's time to get it out of the subs. Look, they've got two reactors in Austin, and they're so good at keeping it quiet. I tell people at, you know, cocktail parties, and they laugh at me, saying, I would have heard. They're both up at the J.J. Pickle Center in North Austin. They're both dangerous research. And for folks that don't know about nuclear power, that means they're turning them on and off all the time. They're doing tests up there. And they've got research reactors all over the country. They've got level 4 bioweapons labs with stuff that will kill all humans it comes in contact with, that makes airborne Ebola look like child's play, in hundreds of facilities in level 2 and level 3 containment. Again, it's like the corporate whores that run things have a death wish, and they want me to be scared of men with beards and turbans, and I'm sick of it.
Right. Well, I'm glad you mentioned the biohazards, because if you come down to it, Alex, I think the top three greatest threats to the continuation of life on our planet, human life in particular, are, number one, the solar flares wiping out modern civilization through the scenario we just described. Number two is GMOs and the genetic engineering and the DNA contamination of our planet. And number three is the bioweapons, the possible release, accidental or intentional, of infectious disease, you know, level 4 bioweapons that devastate human populations. So those three are the big three. Again, solar flares, GMOs, and bioweapons. And they, each one of those could destroy human civilization. In combination, we are really at risk, and we need to take action to stop these death worshipers from having such control over our planet.
Well, Mike, looking at this information, now we've got to hurry, because we've only got a few minutes left here on InfoWars Nightly News. We normally just interview a guest for 10 minutes, but your information is so important, we could talk to you for hours. What do you make of the fact that Rick Perry's being excoriated for his attempted forced inoculation of schoolgirls with the admittedly deadly Gardasil, and the fact that more and more it's coming out that Merck is buying off legislatures to then try to force people to take stuff? I mean, this is the ultimate tyranny here, the ultimate civil rights issue.
Yeah. Well, it also shows the ultimate victory that we are achieving. InfoWars, Prison Planet, you, Alex, what an impact you're having, and Matt Drudge as well, because this issue is now, it has now become an attack point on Rick Perry. Whereas several years ago, I think it was 2007 or 2008, when both InfoWars and Natural News first wrote about this issue, we were the lone voices in the wilderness criticizing Rick Perry for Gardasil vaccines, and people criticized us.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Is going to be joining us to talk about the economy. Way before closures, record. Big jump in jobless claims. Inflation rises. Billions in unemployment benefits paid in error. Rogue trader lost $2 billion. John Mack stepping down as the chairman of Morgan Stanley. New York man banned from hunting anywhere in the world. That's all part of these new global databases. When you go hunting, you go get a driver's license now, then you have to go swipe it to buy a fishing license, anything. They're now saying if you take home a fish that's a half inch too small or too big, you're going to be banned globally. These are global databases, global government. That's all up at Infowars.com. It's also up at DrudgeReport.com. Salisbury man banned from hunting worldwide. A Salisbury resident has been banned from hunting anywhere in the world for 2 years as part of an agreement with federal authorities in Kentucky on charges that he illegally hunted and took wildlife from the state. He took a 14-point buck home, and now he's globally banned, see? It's all globally standardized. The exact same rules in England, Germany, Australia, the U.S. They've had a 40-year program. It'll be 40 years in a few months of taking blood from all babies at birth, putting them in a global database. I told you about that 16 years ago. It's now been declassified in the last two. I had sources inside government DNA database facilities. They tell you it's a blood test. It actually goes into a global UN system. I just mentioned this, but here's the article out of the Associated Press. Mortgage default warnings surge in August. Mortgage default warnings spiked in August, signaling potential new foreclosure wave. And right on time, Jordan is about to fall. The Israelis have pulled people out of their embassy, say it's hanging by a thread. They're about to vote for a Palestinian state, regardless of which side of that you're on. I'm neutral. I'm not in the ancient tribal warfare. I just want to end all the foreign aid and stay out of it. Israel's got its 400 to 800 nukes threatening to nuke people. Some of the Arabs are saying we're going to overthrow you and drive you into the sea. This is a nightmare. And the big banks have been there helping trigger these revolutions, putting Al-Qaeda in Libya, getting the ball rolling for a big world war, pulling in Russia and China as a distraction. Now, on top of all of this, Al Gore, the man who says he invented the internet, the man who said NAFTA and GATT would double our economy in 10 years, totally deindustrialized us, a man who has big palaces all over the place, but says you shouldn't be able to take a hot bath or have a light bulb or a regular toilet, just like Prince Philip and Prince Charles lecturing everyone with their private trains and jets and all the rest of it. Lord Rothschild, you got to pay carbon taxes to him. Australians already are, but he's got private islands, dozens of planes, huge ships. This is the sickening joke, and he has rebranded himself with 24 hours of horse manure. 24 hours of con artistry being lectured by the obese Nelly that is Al Gore. He is so sick. He makes me want to throw up when I hear his voice. In fact, I've gotten to where I cannot hear Al Gore's voice. I was on Man Cow this morning, and we're going to James Dillingpole here in a minute, and they were playing Al Gore clips. And let me tell you something. I figured it out. His voice now drives me insane. You could torture me in a room playing his voice. The fakeness, how he loves everything he says is a lie. He loves conning people. Polar bears can't swim. The ice caps were already going to be all melted. So he's trying to relaunch his fraud. In Aspen, he said they're in deep trouble. On another show where he said, go after deniers, be mean to them. They're like racist. Remember that a few weeks ago? Even the host said, yeah, even my liberal friends are laughing at me now. And I was like, it's all right. So he's gone from lecturing Congress and saying no scientist on Earth doesn't believe global warming's real and man-made and evil. And that all scientists agreed that he was right, to desperately scrabbling around going, there's fires, there's wind, scary, pay me money. James Dillingpole's a best-selling author, and he's also a writer on a host of big publications like the London Telegraph, and he's got a couple new books out, and we'll be talking to him. Right now he's got watermelons out. Everything you knew about the government was wrong. Good to have you here with us today. Mr. Dillingpole, I'm going to ask you what I asked Christopher Monckton last night, Lord Monckton. Is Al Gore at the edge of the cliff, tipping forward, staring into political extinction, or has he already hit the bottom and bounced, and is this a dead cat bounce that's just going to be good for laughs?
Al Gore is on top of the cliff, and he's about to carry us all over the edge with him. That's what he's going to do. It's not good news. And listen, Alex, you've given the enemy ideas. When the new world order arrives, they are now going to put you in a room with Al Gore's voice for the rest of your imprisoned life. Don't give them ideas.
Well, I guess you do have a good point. That's why I did that economic news first and then forgot to put a bow on it. Everything's falling apart. We're imploding. China has none of these rules on it. Everything's shutting down in England, the U.S. Global depression, except in commie land where Al Gore's got companies, and he wants to slap giant taxes on everything. California's already done it and went from 30% unemployment to 35 in 6 months.
The depressing thing about all this, about the coming global economic apocalypse, which is almost upon us, is that there are quite a few people out there who actually desired this thing. This was all part of the plan. If you go back to the Club of Rome, founded in 1968 in David Rockefeller's house in Italy, by two guys, Alexander King and Aurelio Pecce, and you read what these guys are saying about our economic future. And what you realize is that these guys wanted an economic collapse. They wanted to end industrial civilization, number one. And number two, they wanted a new world order. I mean, some of your listeners have probably heard this stuff before. Let me read out one line from one of their documents. This was published in 1974. Now is the time to draw up a master plan for organic, sustainable growth and world development based on global allocation of all finite resources and a new global economic system. That is, and they call this the master plan. They're quite open about it. This was in a book, 1974, Mankind at the Turning Point. This was in bookshops. This is not a conspiracy, or if it is a conspiracy, it's a conspiracy in plain sight. These guys knew exactly what they wanted, and now they are getting it.
That's right. And so when we fight Al Gore and Lord Rothschild and David Rockefeller and all these people who've written hundreds of books, publications, End of the Family, world population reductions of 80%, post-industrial world, Maury Strong, Hansen, Goddard Space Center, this is their religion. And, and they mean to carry it out. And so when we're fighting the man bear pig, you know, I like to joke about it, but really it's not a joke. They're even calling themselves green fascists now. These are authoritarian control freaks. And what's even scarier, they don't even think they're saving the world. It's all a cynical way to seize total power.
Yeah, I was talking to the leader of the British Green Party the other day, and I accused her of being a watermelon. You know, that's green on the outside, red on the inside. Do you know what she said? She said, "I'm proud to be a watermelon." So these people are, as you say, completely upfront about what they want. You've got the Prince of Wales, our future king. He has just been made head of WWF UK. He said that we should all look forward to reducing economic growth, living more sustainably. Well, okay, you can live sustainably when you've got various palaces all over the country where you've got millions of pounds coming in. For the rest of us, it's not going to be easy, this new Great Depression. It's not going to be fun. You know, no matter how many Greens think it's a good idea to bomb us all back to the Dark Ages, we all live in yurts and subsist on grains. Actually, some of us would like an economic future for our children. Some of us would like to go to hospital and get medical treatment. Some of us don't want a life of toil and misery. That's why human beings developed. That's how Western civilization happened. We wanted to improve our lot, not make it worse.
Called the Plantopolis, put out by the eco groups. Now, the version we were able to find on YouTube has somebody making comments on it with text about how it's really a tyranny. But it shows you this future world where you've got to get rations for meat, rations to travel, a total tyranny. Welcome to the planned world. This is what Club of Rome actually calls for. Here it is. Play part of it.
Oh, hi. I'm so glad you're on time. I'm V. I'm looking forward to showing you around Plandopolis today. My husband works from home. He's a virtual engineer working on one of the city's desalination plants. He controls the robots who do all the important maintenance. I think he basically plays computer games for a living. You ready to go? Have you got your calorie card open on your smartphone? I registered your visit with Slick Travel Corp the other day, so they've allotted you a journey time to match mine. It makes so much sense, doesn't it? Switch off brain and go to work. With this many people around, I'm glad there's a mega computer in charge. We're so lucky. Our kids were allocated a school quite near my practice, so I can drop them off on the way. It saves on our calorie ration. Well, it won't be long until the little darlings get their career announcements. They've been working so hard, so I'm sure they'll get something good. Not that there's anything wrong with fixing carbon scrubbers for a living or anything. Are you hungry? Let's pop to the market as we're passing. Right, what's on the menu this month? No, not meat. It's not your birthday. The Global Food Council are doing a really good job of keeping food production going. I mean, you don't get the choice you used to, but we're better off than most. I think it's probably easiest to walk from here. You barely see a car in the city centre nowadays, unless you're rich.
Okay, that's enough. They just aren't practical anymore. Now, you'd think this is a joke. This is not a joke. And this is exactly what they're calling for, the UN, a Global Food Council. It's just amazing. James Dillingpole, they've gone from denying this is their plan. Just 5 years ago, I have the clips. Al Gore would say, there's no plan for a carbon tax. He'd go, what? What are you saying? How dare you say this is a tax? You know, that fake angry thing he does. To yeah. Now going, absolutely, taxes, pay me the money. I mean, these people are just so naked about what they're doing.
Alex, I am gobsmacked. OMG is all I can say to that extraordinary clip. And you're right. Do you remember, was it Lisa Jackson who was talking about how we were all going to have our showers and our showers rationed? They call it smart growth. Smart growth is actually rationing, but in anyone else's book. We had the leader of our Green Party in Britain, Caroline Lucas, who was talking about putting Britain back on a war footing. What she wanted was a return to the days when the government made our decisions for us about what we could eat, about all the healthy food, which is so, so good for us.
No. The BBC actually had scientists on last year and said we all need ration cards that track our calories, what they were just saying right there. And now they admit we're going to take your kids if they're overweight. We'll decide if your kids are shy, we're going to take them. You know, there's all this other oppression, too. I mean, these are systematic tyrants.
Yeah. And, you know, Alex, if you came over to Britain, I think you would be shocked by how abject the populace is now. So few people in this country are freaked out by what is going on. So many of them accept it as normal. In the same way, I imagine that after a time in Nazi Germany, people got used to all the rules and regulations and the disappearances and stuff. You know, it's one of the facts of life you just had to accept to get on. But these are worrying times.
Well, they're saying now, every pundit, Soros, you name it,
yeah,
give our private banks that sold you the derivatives total control over Europe and pass VAT and carbon taxes and pay us or face a depression. And so we're now into this financial global dictatorship run by cold-blooded bankers that are going to use enviro-cultism as the cover for austerity slavery. And the only thing that can stop them is getting the word out to people. I hope people in England and the U.S. and their places realize every time we give in to them, they don't take their boot off our neck. They stomp that much harder.
Well, Alex, you know, when I wrote my book, Watermelons, I started writing it about a year ago. And I was writing about all this New World Order stuff. I was reading the Bibles of the Green Movement, you know, like Rachel Carson, the world's biggest mass murderer, probably the 20th century, with her banning of DDT, thus condemning lots of people to death from malaria. I read about these people, about Paul Ehrlich, and about the Club of Rome. And I thought all this stuff was kind of in the future. But the future is happening now. All the scary things that I describe in Watermelons are coming true. This economic collapse was brought about by well-meaning Greens who just wanted to make the world a better, fairer place, just to save the environment, and they persuaded so many ordinary people that this was a good cause worth supporting. And so many people still believe these lies, which unfortunately is why we're in this mess. Not enough people are resisting because, hey, we all want the world to be nicer and greener and fairer, don't we? Well, not if it looks like Al Gore's vision, not if it looks like the Prince of Wales' the Club of Rome's vision, not if it's what Maurice Strong wants, because this is hell on Earth. In the name of saving the planet, these guys have created hell on Earth.
Well, when you get around these professor types like Eric Pianca at UT and others, They get wild-eyed when they talk about everyone's going to die. The airborne Ebola is coming. Oh, we've got to do this. And then you find out that they're involved in all these calls to put things in the food and water to sterilize us. It's a guild of just murderous control freaks running around with a bunch of well-meaning do-gooder acolytes. But, you know, you talked about that big study they did, last year now, that came out earlier this year, in Canada, where they're six times more likely environmentalists to be criminals because it's rationalized that they can do whatever they want. It's like some type of moral authority thing. Instead of being good in business or good at art or accomplishing something, they like join the cult and then hate everyone. And they're like little priests who are going to go around and basically prosecute us or as heretics in some 21st century persecution. What would the word for it be? The Inquisition.
Yeah. Well, there's a famous line from the Club of Rome, which is, "The earth has a cancer, and the cancer is man." Now, if you actually believe, as these watermelons do, these environmentalists, if you believe that mankind really is a cancer on the face of the earth, there is nothing you would not do to save Mother Gaia. And that includes, I suppose, killing people, which is what effectively, when they banned DDT, when Rachel Carson brought the banning, the near global ban on DDT, that's essentially what she did to the people who died in the Third World. But I don't think that these people are going to become less extreme as time goes by. I think unless we resist them, unless we explain what underlies their thinking, people are going to be carry on being taken in by this lie. You know, the people who are watching Al Gore's 24 hours of climate lies, they're going to believe it, and they are going to persecute dissenting scientists, a bit like Galileo was persecuted by the Catholic Church.
Well, Al Gore is starting, as you know, in his speeches to say, go after people, get in their face. They're like racists that beat black people. And so they really are inciting this. And as you know, in Europe, calling for our arrest and other people's arrest. In closing, you know, I think you really said it earlier. You would listen to my show years ago. I know you're a well-read research guy, and it does sound radical. It does sound insane. But it's not that I'm insane. I have really faced, and you've read their quotes here, what they are, who they are. I've confronted them. I've learned about their philosophy. And it's almost like it's impolite or it sounds wild to come tell the truth. So I understand how we all kind of hold back and it couldn't be that bad. And I'm here to tell people it's worse than we can describe. Because even though we can glimpse how bad these people are, we are not them. I mean, their control freak weirdness is beyond anything we can even grasp. And we must realize that we're not calling for their arrest. We're not calling, you know, even though they're calling for mass murder and all this, we're just saying these are dangerous people and they're calling for our arrest. Folks, these are authoritarians. These are modern Nazis. These are the progeny of every dictator and control freak, strongman cult, Mao Zedong, Pol Pot, Hitler, Julius Caesar, with a modern weird, ninnying, gibbering, control freak icing on top, and they must be met, they must be faced. These are dangerous people.
Absolutely. Alex, at the risk of being immodest, may I recommend, as a useful primer to what is going on, this book I've written, Watermelons?
Yes, I hope people get it.
It does spell it out. It does explain the origins of this thinking in the Green Movement. How it was that people came to believe the biggest lie, biggest and most expensive lie in human history.